Welcome everybody in this cyber meditation hall. So good to see you again today on this ordinary Thursday, but a beautiful day. It's full of our metta practice. Either it's just the beginning of the day or it's already towards the end of the day, wherever you are. As usual, we will start with some sharing. So anybody who has something to share with all of us, please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I'll share again. So yesterday I went for a walk, and it was really hard to go for a walk yesterday. It was thousands of excuses why I don't need to go for a walk that day. And I managed to get out like 1 hour later than normally. And when I started walking, I started to feel this incredible lightness that I never felt before. But it was not like a lightheadedness. It was just like a thousand tons of burden fell off my shoulders. And it just felt like, wow, I don't need to save the world. And it was just so beautiful, because in all these years of metta practice, I was trying so hard to save the world and to save myself. And it was after the talk with Varanyani yesterday. And I think those interviews are so important. So I'm so grateful that you're offering that, because in the moment when we say things out, I have a feeling that the brain kind of makes it, kind of integrates it. And the healing just happens even more than without those interviews. So I realized that all those years, I was really trying so hard. And that the point is not in trying so hard, and we don't need to save the world, and we don't need to save ourselves. And it was just such a beautiful, it was just a beautiful lightness, such a clarity and clear. And I was so incredibly grateful, and I didn't even realize I'm doing metta for a difficult person. Thank you so much for everything you're offering and all the support of the Sangha here.
Thank you, Michelle.
Hi, I would like to share something about yesterday's forgiveness practice. When we did it in our online session, I felt there was more to explore. So I repeated it in my sitting meditation, and I actually had to repeat it several times before I could really find the words for the hurt and the harm that was done, and not letting all the stories come in. So it took me several times. But when I finally was there, there was just one moment of nothing, it seems. Like there is a construction site outside, there is traffic, but for a moment there was just pure like silence, and then everything started again, of course. And then I felt so tired, and actually it's in the morning where I am, and I'm still very tired. So I guess it's like one of those Sisyphus rocks that I did not realize until now, probably, that it has been very heavy. So perhaps it doesn't make sense, but it was a touching experience, and I'm very tired. Thank you.
Thank you, Henny, for sharing this. Who else feels to share something? Small or big, important or not important? If right now nothing comes up, I will share a quote from a Tibetan master, a monk, which kind of expresses our metta attitude. And it's the quote, "Every morning, your first thought should be to dedicate the day for the welfare and happiness of all beings." So to kind of, dedicate the day to work for the welfare and happiness of all beings, which is an expression of metta. So maybe with this, can you remember what your first thought was this morning? And share it with us.
Hello, everybody. This is Christian. Yeah, this was my first thought too, but I practiced it since I heard you. It's a quote of Dogen Rinpoche, I think. And it's really wonderful. Just it can become easily an habit to just be aware of that. And I practiced that since the last retreat, and it's very powerful. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing this, Christian. Sky, please. Yeah.
I do that every morning as well, and I find it a wonderful way to start the day. Each morning, the last few mornings though, immediately my first thought is that I miss my little dog who just passed away last Saturday. And so I just have this little wish for her that she has a good rebirth and just appreciate her little presence that's no longer here. But then it just opens up to wishing all beings a safe and well. And that's beautiful. Yeah, it works really well. So thank you.
Thank you, Sky. If there is nobody else who wants to share something, then we leave it at this. And I hand over the microphone to Aya Viranyani.
Thank you, Aria. And thank you for sharing, everyone who has. Because it's just so lovely to hear how the practice is moving through everybody. Sometimes we try so hard to do the practice right, but actually our job is to be the practice, to let it live through us, to manifest in the world, in speech and action. And to keep developing it. moment to moment, in the sitting, in the walking, in our general activities, to keep inclining, to keep cultivating this habit of kindness. And I really love that quote from Dilgo Khyentse that Ariya just mentioned. Because often it's the development of habit really needs support, and we support each other in this. But the support also of strong intention cannot be understated. So there's a Pali word. It's actually one of the Paramis, Aditana, which means determination in English. This is a quality of heart and mind that is fully developed in Buddhas and in those of us going in that direction. And Aditana, we tend in the West to take it as something hard. Being determined is quite a strong quality, a strong part of one's character. But taking the softer version of determination into our practice, it can be very, very useful in supporting this development of a metta habit. So by drawing the mind towards this wish first thing in the morning, and really being conscious of that, I dedicate my life today for the welfare and benefit of living beings everywhere. And really staying with that, then just putting it down, letting it be, and going on with our day, makes an imprint in our mind stream, in our heart stream, in the flow of consciousness that comes out of that. It's not always so easy to see it, but it can't help but have an effect. So it's very, very beneficial to reflect about what we want to cultivate in the day and make that determination first thing in the morning. Likewise, making a determination at the beginning of a sitting. And it's funny, because when I use that word to make a determination, I actually pull back a little bit, because it's far too harsh. The language is far too heavy. It's far too almost martial, you know. But to rest the heart there with awareness at the beginning of a sitting or at the beginning of a day is one thing that helps memory. And as I think I said early on, the importance of mindfulness in this is both connection and remembering. We connect with the heart, we connect with each other and with this well-wishing. And we remember to do this over and over and over again. So that remembering is what develops the habit. And what supports that remembering is that resting firmly, yet softly, in this wish that we have. And then we let that play out by itself. This is, I think, one of the most beautiful things about it. Because for us in the West, it's so common that we do the practice, that we try to do the practice, that we cultivate metta in a really kind of forceful way. And I wanted to speak a little bit about this today, because it's such a subtle thing, but such a really important thing to understand. And that's, how can we engage fully in the practice without actually cultivating wrong effort or unskillful and not useful forms of effort? And I wanted to speak a little bit about right effort because it's so important. As many of you know, so please be patient with the reminder, right effort is fourfold. Right effort, I mean this quite specifically, as one of the limbs of the Eightfold Path. So right effort is fourfold, and it's very simple. Right effort is with regard to wholesome mind states, to encourage wholesome mind states that have not yet arisen, with regards to the ones that have arisen, is to maintain them, to encourage their continuity. And with regard to unwholesome mind states, it's to discourage the ones that have not yet arisen. And to abandon the ones that have arisen. To just walk away. So right effort is the energy with which we do this. So it's not so much about how much energy we're using, but the direction the energy is going. What it's being used for. And this can be quite subtle. As Sayadaw spoke the other day about the near enemies of metta, for example. The near enemy of metta being attached affection, any form of clinging and attachment that manifests as mundane affection, that has an agenda. And this can be for ourselves or anyone else, actually. So those agendas can be very subtle. And sometimes it can be very difficult in the practice to know whether we're feeding a wholesome agenda or an unwholesome one. One key that's very useful here in discerning wholesome from unwholesome is rooted in the Four Noble Truths. Unwholesome states are universally based in clinging or aversion. And in the Eightfold Path, the Buddha lays out there is suffering and there's a cause of suffering. That being clinging. And he doesn't explicitly say so, but the flip side of clinging is aversion. Either we want something or we don't want something, but want something else. So this is a big hint. Because if, no matter how subtly, we're cultivating metta for example, wanting something to arise or wanting something to go away, and that doesn't happen, and we suffer. So the hint about our attitude, our intention, is it wholesome or unwholesome? Is, am I suffering? Does it distress me that the practice is doing what it's doing? That gives us a very large and very clear view of our inner landscape. Oh, there's an agenda here. Okay. Where am I clinging? Where is aversion? So when we can just practice in order to care, for all beings everywhere without exception, no matter who they are, no matter what they're doing to us or around us, no matter what we personally are doing, no matter what's arising in the mind, that really profound acceptance is free from clinging. As it says in the chant that we did yesterday in Pali, the translation, boundless, exalted, immeasurable. It doesn't measure beings up depending on how they are treating us or how well we are doing. It's ourself. No, it's just, oh, that person is a living being. May they be happy. So any effort or any energy we use to incline to that simple care for anybody, no matter what, anywhere, that's right effort. And doing the metta practice without an agenda is the essence of right effort. I mean, it's so much that. So I wanted now to speak a little bit of metta for all beings. Because this is where we're going today. And sometimes it feels like too far to leap, or too high to leap, from one being to many. It's like, ooh, that's a lot to hold in the heart. And what I want to speak to is the simplicity of metta for all beings. We come to this from having radiated metta for ourselves, that direct understanding, wanting to be happy. And then to other beings whose experience we cannot know, but by inference, well, that's a living being, may they be happy. Using our relationship to that person, either the benefactor or a dear friend, to support that connection. And then we arrive at the neutral category, which is kind of disconcerting at first because we don't have any stories to hang the metta onto. And we get that first taste, as we said before, of, oh, metta without any agenda, without needing a story. And then, having done the practice with a difficult person, when we arrive to all beings, sometimes to me it feels like coming out of a very intimate landscape of valleys and mountains onto a great plain. And suddenly there's this immense view of the sky. And it feels so big. It's like, wow. But it's really not much different than radiating metta to any other being that is not ourselves. Or any living being for whom we don't have a story. So in the same way, as Arya said, just as I want to be happy, so may you be happy. This we need when we begin to radiate metta for others. And it's no different for all beings. All we need to know, oh, there are living beings there. Just as I want to be happy, so may they be happy. And just as with the neither loved nor hated person, we don't know their story. We don't know their experience. So now this is multiplied many times. Many, 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 many times. Ten factorial times. It's almost infinite. But the action of the heart is the same. It just opens. We don't have to know a story, just like with a neutral person. We don't have to know their story. They're a living being, may they be happy. And we can't connect personally with the suffering or the happiness of living beings, all living beings. In the same way as we can't connect personally with the happiness or suffering of a single living being. It's the very same opening, regardless of whether we know personally or not. So please don't worry too much about this, because you've been doing this all along. Radiating metta to one being, opening to that being who we might not know even. We have no idea their story, but they're living, so may they be happy. That's the same activity as opening to all living beings. The only difference is the number. And the main difference, though, and please don't get hung up here, is we can't imagine all beings. We can't directly, unless we are Buddhas, and know each individual living being and their experience. We can't even imagine, you know, they're living beings. If I look right now out my window, I see trees, I see insects, I see birds, I see spiders. But I know, at least intellectually, that between me and the trees 20 meters away, and in those trees, and in the trees right outside my window, there are an uncountable number of beings whom I cannot see. But just looking in that direction, even though I can't see them individually, they're all in my line of sight. And it's the same with the metta. We just turn the heart in that direction and it radiates out. So trying to connect with each living being when we radiate metta for all beings is not only impossible, but it's a waste of energy. We don't have to do that. That's trying to do metta's work for it. It will do that just fine. We don't have to do that. We just need to turn the heart in that direction. And I think of metta for all beings in the same way as I think of a lighthouse. You know, one of those old-fashioned lighthouses that sits on the rocks. Maybe a little tiny rocky island offshore. And on a foggy night, this great beam of light circles in all directions through the fog. touching everything it encounters, every little bit of water vapor, illuminating it. And it just turns. So when we radiate metta for all beings, it can be like that. We set the intention. We connect with this, and it's an idea of all beings. Well, may all beings, whatever they are, wherever they are, be well, happy, and peaceful. And connecting with the heart and repeating this well-wishing and really, really resting there, then that radiation of metta does its own work. And it goes out by itself. May all beings be happy. I don't have to know what all those beings are outside my window. I just incline in that direction. So using intention, setting an intention, a little bit of gentle determination, and then inclining to all beings, however we do that. And all that said, I mean, we can go directly to, well, may all beings be happy. May all beings be peaceful. No. This said, it can be helpful to beginning the practice for all beings by radiating loving kindness for smaller groups of beings who, at least intellectually, we have some sense of. And it's a really interesting progression in the texts. From the earliest texts where the Buddha is speaking about metta, where he just says, radiate metta for all beings everywhere, whatever size they are, wherever they are, near or far away, whether in their bodies or without bodies, may they be happy. May all beings be happy. That chant we do, metta sahagatena cetasa ekam disam, I will abide pervading all the directions with metta. There's no kind of simple steps between myself and all beings. You know, when we go from category to category, it's just, oh, all beings. The other chant we've been doing, the metta chant, though, is from a slightly later stratum of the texts. It's still in the root Nikayas. It's from the Patthisamhita Magga, which is a late text. And it goes through that sequence of categories, sort of sequence of categories. It at least breaks all beings down into different smaller groups. So taking some of these smaller groups can be very helpful in the practice to give us a beginning of this. So sabbe sata, sabbe pana, sabbe bhuta, sabbe bhugala. And then what's interesting is it goes into pairs of opposites. Sabba itiyo, sabbe purisa. Sabbe ariya, sabbe anariya. Sabbe dewa, sabbe pugala. So it's these pairs of opposites that are a lot of fun to use in the practice, I find anyway. So that's what I'll be doing today in our practice. Taking some of these. It gives the mind something to connect with more easily than just this amorphous, unknowable, all beings everywhere without exception. And our minds are like that. We want to know. We want to have a sense of all beings. And we'll be doing that today, but the final thing I want to say, though, before we begin the practice, is to say once again how fluid and flexible and creative it's possible to be when you come up with different categories to expand from one being to many. There's so many ways you can do this, and they're all correct. You can get really creative with this. So, for example, one of the classic ways is to begin by way of proximity. In other words, by way of how close we are to those people. So we begin with ourselves, and then the people right next to us, or in the same building, on the same street, in the same neighborhood, in the same city, in the same country, in the same continent, on the same planet, in the same universe. So expanding, like a ring, a ripple of water, when you drop a stone in the water, it expands. Expanding like that. From a small point to infinity. That's something most of us are familiar with. It's the most commonly offered metta practice, I think, probably. I don't know for sure, but certainly in the context of Vipassana retreats, this is what often happens. Another way is hinted at in that metta chant by that little passage in the middle between the repetition of the sabbe sattva part. Bharati maya, etc., that part. If you look at your sheet. Bharati maya disaya, pachi maya disaya, uttaraya disaya, dakinaya disaya, etc. These speak to directions, compass headings, cardinal directions. So we can radiate metta by way of direction. And this is where that lighthouse metaphor is really quite lovely, because we can just be a lighthouse, all beings in the north, all beings in the northeast, all beings in the east. And we just turn the heart in that direction. We don't have to turn the body, but we just... all, everyone over there. And we just let the metta shine out and then slowly turn. If we do each of those directions plus above and below for 5 minutes, that's almost an hour of practice. And 5 minutes in that context goes by very quickly. So I really like that. It's a very enjoyable way of practice. Or if we're just taking a walk, not informal practice, we can radiate metta in front of us as though there is a beam of light going out from our hearts. And when we turn the corner, oh, that beam turns too. So if we do a walk, from our home in a big circle, coming back home again, a big loop, we will have automatically been radiating metta for all beings. So just walking around like that can be very enjoyable. And then, it's only up to your imagination how you relate to all beings, how you want to define all beings. And you can really play with this in your practice. I have roots as a biological scientist, so I can go through all of life. The beings, I tend to do it using the basic categories. Oh, okay. All beings who are my benefactors. All living beings who are my benefactors. You know, from the farmers and the honeybees that have anything to do with my food to, you know, beings who allow trees to photosynthesize, creating the oxygen I breathe. And then all beloved beings, beings I know, human and non-human, beings I just happen to like a lot, birds, border collies. And then the vast number of unknown beings, which is quite beautiful to imagine. Who knows what's out there? Who knows who's out there? Out right outside my window, right now, there's so many beings out there. May they all be happy. Two difficult beings, beings that I don't like. And I think it's very interesting because I tend to use he, she articles and who when I think of beings, but not with beings I don't like. They are it. Which just shows you the aversion that can creep in without knowing. Oh, it, that being. No, but all those beings I don't like, don't appreciate for some reason, both human and non-human. And then opening up to everybody. So you can do that. Or find your own way in. You can't do it wrong. And understanding that one of the things that can be disconcerting for all beings is not just that they're hard to connect to, but we want to know the metta is working. And we think, well, how can I know? I know, how can I affect the happiness of some being who I don't even know they exist? And this kind of question that can come up in the mind is a manifestation of an agenda and how we're trying to make the metta personal. And as Ariya said some days ago already, and we've all said actually, but I distinctly remember when she said, metta is without an agenda. It's not about the outcome, it's about our hearts and cultivating the metta here, right here at home, for those beings. So it's a resting back and opening the heart so that the light naturally shines out. And I think, Michelle, what you said was so beautiful. I don't need to save the world. We don't have to save all beings. This is also an agenda, and it's such a heavy one. It's not our job. It really isn't. Excuse me while I get out of the sun. It's not our job to save all beings. It's not our job to save the world. It's our job to care, no matter what. That's all the metta is. It's not so dramatic or huge. But can we care? Even if we don't have stories or relationships or even knowledge of beings. May all beings be happy. So please don't worry if this is a little less tangible than previous categories. It's bound to be. Because there isn't that personal relationship. There isn't that personal agenda. This is where we can really rest in the coolness of metta. That is peaceful. That is quiet. That is without a story. Just a strong, heartfelt wish. May all beings be happy. So let's take this up as a practice. Please get comfortable. Taking a moment simply to be present in the silence. Connect with the heart, connect with this being, right here, right now. Connect with this simple desire for happiness. And for about 5 minutes, taking up the metta for wherever and whomever it's easiest, either yourself or one of the previous categories, and I'll guide you on after that. And now cultivating loving kindness for all human beings on this planet, and maybe above this planet, in airplanes, space stations. All humans everywhere, whoever they are, whatever culture, whatever ethnicity, whatever gender, whatever nationality. Never mind any of those human constructs, but simply all people everywhere. May all people
Be happy.
Safe and protected from harm, free from suffering. And staying with all people for some minutes, I'll guide you further. Using the same phrase you've used before. And now cultivating loving kindness for all non-human beings, any living being that is not a human being, no matter where they are, what they look like. Whether they have bodies or no bodies, whoever they are, may all non-human beings be well, happy, and peaceful. safe and protected from harm. And now, radiating loving kindness for all beings who are enlightened, all enlightened beings. Beings who have attained any of the stages of enlightenment, whether they be fully enlightened or partially so. And now all beings who are not enlightened, whether completely deluded or partially so, all worldly beings, may all beings anywhere without exception have happiness and the causes of happiness. Taking the last few minutes of the sitting to just rest with this profound, open kindness. So metta for all beings is our practice in the sitting, in the walking, in the general activities in the next 24 hours. And in the sitting practice particularly, also the walking practice, the formal practice, you can play with some of the different categories that are mentioned in the chants we do. I didn't have time now to do much more than two pairs of opposites. But you can choose others. For example, all males, all females, all those who are somewhere in between that. All beings with bodies, all beings without bodies, and so on. Or play with going directly to all beings everywhere and see how that feels. If you don't feel quite so grounded in connection, then go back to some one of these categories that speaks to you and use that as the basis for opening up. And of course, in general activities, you can do anything you want. So long as you're inclining heart and mind to well-wishing, so long as it's right effort. So however you can keep a momentum of inclining to metta for all beings. And this is where I so love it if you're in a city, and particularly walking at night through a neighborhood. It's not so obvious in the daytime. In the daytime, what's clear is, oh yeah, there are lots of people in cars and walking down the street. But at nighttime, when you're walking through a neighborhood in a city and you see all the lights in people's homes lit up, you can't see the beings behind those windows because usually the curtains are drawn, but you can see there's light in there, which means there's some living being in there. Oh, and there's so many people. And who knows how they live or what they do or any of their stories, but may they be happy. It's very, very tender. So enjoy the tenderness of this. So with that, I'll turn you over to Aria for the questions and the chanting for today.
Thank you, dear sister. So now the space is open for your questions. Maybe the heart is still so full of metta that there is no room for questions. And if there is no question right now, we can start with a chant and then see if in between or when chanting, a question has come up. So then I suggest we go to the first chant on page 1, this metta chant, which Aya Viranyani has mentioned, as here we have different expressions of cultivating metta to either all beings, which are the 5 first lines, sabbe satta, sabbe panna, sabbe bhuta, sabbe pugala, sabbe atta bhava pariyapanna. So these are five different expressions, but in meaning, they mean the same. Simply all living beings. And then come different categories, females, males, and so on. And then come the wishes. And here we also have the 10 directions, the 4 cardinal directions, the directions in between, above and below. And as you know, we go one time through and then start again and end at the end of the second paragraph with Kamma Sakha. So then we'll start. Sabbe Satta, Sabbe Panna, Sabbe Buddha, Sabbe Pogala, Sabbe Atabhava, Pariyapanna, Sabba Itiya, Sabbe Purisa, Sabbe Ariya, Sabbe Anariya, Sabbe Deva, Sabbe Manusa, Sabbe Vinipatika, Avirahantu, Abhyabhajahantu, Anigahantu, Sukhiyatanang Pariharantu, Dukkhamochantu, Yathalada Sampatito Mavigacchantu Kamma Sakha. Purati Maya Disaya, Pachi Maya Disaya, Uttaraya Disaya, Dakinaya Disaya, Purati Maya Anudisaya, Pachi Maya Anudisaya, Uttaraya Anudisaya, Dakinaya Anudisaya, Heti Maya Disaya, Upari Maya Disaya. Sabbe Satta, Sabbe Panna, Sabbe Buddha, Sabbe Pogala, Sabbe Atabhava Pariyapanna, Sabba Itiya, Sabbe Purisa, Sabbe Ariya, Sabbe Anariya, Sabbe Deva, Sabbe Manusa, Sabbe Vinipatika, Avirahantu, Abhyabhajahantu, Anigahantu, Sukhiyatanang Pariharantu, Dukkhamochantu, Yathalada Sampatito Mavigacchantu Kamma Sakha. So in the meantime, has there come up a question?
I have a question.
Yes, please.
But I try to formulate it, and it feels a bit less vulnerable, the question. It's not about practice. It's about, well, as a woman, sometimes you think about children, I can feel adopting children is an act of metta. And sometimes this feeling, when you're getting your own children from a Buddhistic view, I just reflected about it because when you aren't enlightened, you are reborn. So whenever family you are, to go further. But what is the Buddhistic view of it? I don't know if you understand the question.
I think. So thank you for bringing up this. You know, one aspect is that the Buddha basically said, as human beings, we should live a virtuous life, taking care of one, of each other, not causing harm or suffering to other beings. And for this, he gave the precepts. And as you know, he gave the five basic precepts. And in these five basic precepts, the third one is to abstain from sexual misconduct. And, you know, with this we can see the Buddha was well aware that as human beings, you know, we have the capacity to reproduce and found families, bring children into this world. So the Buddha was not against it, you know, but he said use the sexuality in a way that you do not hurt and harm others, yourself. And living a virtuous life, you know, then also teach your children to become a virtuous person, to do good in this world, to help relieve suffering, or at least not create any more suffering. Or, you know, teach them to live with metta, to be kind, friendly, compassionate persons in this world. Teach them, you know, to try to understand reality, like practicing vipassana meditation, to reduce the defilements as much as possible, and to cultivate the wholesome quality as much as possible. And in regard to this topic, you know, what also is said is that, you know, if you decide to get pregnant, to give birth to a child, then with this you allow a living being, you know, to take birth in the human realm, which is considered to be a good realm, because here we have the possibility, you know, to purify our heart and mind. So by bringing a child into this world, a living being, you offer this place of rebirth. Or adopting a child, again, you know, you offer this child a place where it can grow up, you know, hopefully in a harmonious and virtuous field, so that this child, this adopted child, becomes a decent, virtuous, kind, generous human being. These are the reflections that just pop up in my mind.
Yeah, thank you.
So then we can go on to the next chant, as there is nobody raising their hand or speaking up. And so I want to go to page 3 at the bottom, the 4 boundless states, and we'll do it in English. Let's begin. I will abide, pervading one quarter, with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself. I will abide, pervading the all-encompassing world, with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I will abide, pervading one quarter, with a mind imbued with compassion, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself. I will abide, pervading the all-encompassing world, with a mind imbued with compassion, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I will abide, pervading one quarter, with a mind imbued with gladness, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself. I will abide, pervading the all-encompassing world, with a mind imbued with gladness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I will abide, pervading one quarter, with a mind imbued with equanimity, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself. I will abide, pervading the all-encompassing world, with a mind imbued with equanimity, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will.
Again, the question goes out, is there a question?
Yes, I have a question, please.
Please, Ekaterina.
I have noticed that when I cultivate metta for all beings, using categories of those beings, obviously the preferences kick in. So some categories of beings are easier to cultivate metta to, or to use as object for your metta cultivation. And the mind avoids the difficult ones, because usually from what I know, it's just we have to go to the easy ones, right? Or where cultivating is easier. So, but isn't that kind of avoiding the more difficult categories, and you kind of like mind is like, okay, they are difficult, so let me just try this maybe some other time, and then you never really go back, and then, so a way of avoiding dealing with something that is a little bit more difficult. That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Ekaterina. Yes, right. You know, basically you understand, beginning where it's easier and then go to the more difficult ones. And, you know, now having opened up to all beings or categories of beings, again, you know, we can start where it's easy, where, you know, the metta comes, but, and avoiding those categories which are still a bit more difficult or challenging for us, you know, we can do it consciously and say, okay, not yet. One day I will do you this category. So in this way, it's not an avoidance or a pushing away, but an intelligent decision. I stay with these categories where I can do it, where it's possible, where I can strengthen my metta, and at one stage, one day, I will address these more challenging groups or categories.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Is there another question popped up, maybe? A short one?
I have a question, but I think Sheila had her hand up before.
She shakes her head.
Okay, so my question was about when I was doing metta for the irritating person, if I focused on my own heart and just wanted to develop love for that person, it was quite easy. But if I put my attention on the qualities of the person that the irritating qualities of the person, it was much more challenging. And I wondered if that was just beyond my capacity at that time, or whether it was just more wholesome to focus on the heart rather than on the object of the practice.
Thank you, Leslie. Again, you know, we start or we do it where it's easy for us, how it's easy for us, and when it's easy for you to focus on your heart and cultivating metta for that irritating person, then start there. But, you know, trying to go a step further, and instead of focusing on these qualities that are irritating, you know, the Buddha said, rather look at the good qualities of that person. You know, there are qualities that are irritating, but somehow there are also good sides in this person. So you might reflect on that and take, you know, such a good quality and focus on that. You know, there it's kind of reach or bring your mind to the person, but first of all, look at their good side to cultivate the metta. So the time is up for our general session. I'd like to finish just with a few words of chanting, and something that is easy, and you don't need to pick up your sheets. It's just the Metta Karuna Mudita Upekkha. We'll do it maybe a couple of times, so to close the session with this.
Metta Karuna Mudita Upekkha. Metta Karuna Mudita Upekkha. metta karuna mudita upekkha, metta karuna mudita upekkha, metta karuna mudita upekkha, metta karuna mudita upekkha.
May our hearts be filled with metta and radiated out into the world and the universe. So the interview groups, it's group C with Ayaviranyani, and in 5 minutes, I suppose. And it's group F with me in 15 minutes from now. See you again.
Yes, and everybody in my group, please log out, and I'm going to start the meeting again on my telephone. My computer battery was going.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.